You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Coming up on the show today, we talk to the journalist behind a new documentary series, The Valley, which investigates and critiques the New Zealand Defence Force's role in Afghanistan. We explore the issues of climate change in this year's election. We have perspectives from the Māori Party co-leader Marama Fox. We're also joined by the Opportunities Party candidate Jeff Simmons, who's going to be joining us each week in the lead up to the election. Nigel Brunel, the Director of Financial Markets at OMF, and Victoria University Professor James Renwick also weigh in on the debate. On the Green Desk, Lily Peacock speaks to an environmental protection group looking after Auckland's Meola Creek. If you want to let us know your thoughts on anything we cover, you can call us on 309 3879 or give us a text on 5395.
The Wire. That's funny. What does it sound like?
So first up, producer Lucy's going to introduce her story.
So today I'm doing a report on the actions of New Zealand Defence Forces in Afghanistan. I'm firstly going to speak with the writer and journalist of the Valley documentary, Paula Penfold, that focuses on two operations. Firstly, the Battle of Baghaq, and secondly, an SAS operation. You released last night the Valley documentary, which is in connection with Fairfax Media Stuff and Media Works, and covers two operations in Afghanistan and New Zealand's involvement in it. Can you tell me a little bit more about the documentary and what led you to making it?
So we started about 3 years ago on this project when we did an investigation for TV3 on one of those battles. It was the Battle of Baghaq in August 2012, which killed two New Zealand soldiers and wounded six more. And four Afghan soldiers were also killed in that battle. And we got a message from an obviously fake social media account afterwards. It was from a former soldier. And he said, well, that could have been a lot better, which as a journalist, obviously, you don't really like to hear. But it became apparent upon meeting with him that we really had only scratched the surface in that first investigation. And so we started looking then at the Battle of Baghaq in more detail. And as a result of that, we ended up starting looking at the wider deployment to Afghanistan and also at that SAS mission in 2004, which was also the subject of the Valley.
So in the first episode, you talk to the families of soldiers lost in those battles, and you really stress the importance that the public know this information. But does this not undermine like New Zealand Defence Force and the Armed Forces' work by investigating it so critically?
Not at all. I mean, the reason that we're doing it is because, as I said, soldiers have approached us. And the reason soldiers have approached us is because they believe that lessons were not learned, particularly from that battle in 2012. There was a court of inquiry. The court of inquiry didn't actually visit the battle site. It didn't actually interview Afghan soldiers who were there on the day. So it only got one half of the story. And even that half of the story, it didn't get right. And so I think it's absolutely fundamental in a society that questions should be able to be asked of the Defence Force. As one of the soldiers very eloquently puts it, it's supposed to be a symbiotic relationship between the military and society. And that seems to have broken down in New Zealand over the past few years, where they don't feel that they're accountable at all. They completely refuse to be involved in this investigation at all. They wouldn't front a single person. And, you know, we understand that there are some occasions on which operational security reasons mean that they can't talk about missions, but that time has long since passed in these battles, and so there is no reason why they shouldn't front up, and there is no reason why they shouldn't be investigated.
You just mentioned that you know the inquiry only had one side because of, well, it was only one side of the story, and they didn't go to the battle site. In your documentary, you talk a lot to the Afghan soldiers. And I know I understand that you tried very hard to get in contact with the New Zealand Defence Force and the SAS, and neither would cooperate and put an input into this piece. But how accurate, therefore, do you think this information you've collected is, given that you don't have the perspective and information other than the court hearing that of their perspective?
Yeah, that's a good question. And given that the version of the Court of Inquiry that we do have is full of redactions, it's really, really hard to get an accurate reading of what happened without the NZDF involvement at all when they refused point blank to talk to us. However, As you might have picked up, there is lots of information in the investigation that has come from soldiers, regardless of the fact that NZDF tried to gag them. So there are some who are no longer with the army who were happy to provide us with information. So we're really confident of the facts as we have reported them, particularly given, as I said and you've pointed out, you know, that half of the story has never been told before. So I think we have a much more complete picture than the Court of Inquiry ever did.
Taking this a bit wider now, going on from your documentary, do you think, you know, the world's becoming an increasingly more cosmopolitan place with bodies like the UN and NATO holding an increasing presence globally? Some may argue that we're seeing the demise of the nation state. And what do you think about this, and how do you think this affects war today?
Yeah, I mean, I think so we interviewed the former Afghanistan president, Hamid Karzai, while we were there, and there's not much of that interview in the documentary, but the full version is available on the Valley website if you wanted to have a look. He's really interesting on that kind of question, in that he, you know, he was a supporter of the coalition forces in the first place, but he comes out really strongly saying, criticising the coalition forces, criticising NATO, because of the way that their operations were carried out in Afghanistan. And it's really sad being there when you see that, you know, there are, you know, estimates that the Taliban is now in control of 60% of the rural area of, of Afghanistan. And so the question is asked by Hamid Karzai and others, what difference did that, you know, did the coalition forces make? And I think it's a really fair question.
Yeah, you
and we should be asking that in New Zealand too. What's been interesting in other countries who went to war in Afghanistan, they've had really full, open, transparent discussions and commissions of inquiry asking whether they achieved their objectives in heading to war in Afghanistan. We have not had that in New Zealand. And I don't think it's really good enough if you're going to send our soldiers to war to then get home from war and not even have any kind of proper debrief about why we were there and what we achieved.
Yeah, so like going off that, in the final episode, which is called Consequences, you talk about the lasting effects of New Zealand's presence in Afghanistan. And as you said, you talked to the president of Afghanistan, and you stress there's been this increase in, well, he stresses that there's been an increase of radicalization and attacks, and as you just said, potentially as much as 60% of provincial areas being held. But how much do you think this is actually not so much to do with New Zealand Defence Force and NATO's actions or inaction, but actually due to the growing radical Islamic movement that's sweeping across the Middle East?
Clearly, that is an incredibly large factor. And so there are, you know, multiple insurgent groups that the Afghanistan government is trying to deal with at the moment. And, you know, just to put it in perspective about how little we hear of the results of that, we were in Afghanistan for less than 3 weeks. In that time, nearly 640 people were killed or wounded across Afghanistan. You don't hear about that anymore in New Zealand, do you? But that day-to-day life and death risk in Afghanistan is really clear when you're there. And so that unrest in that country and in that region, I mean, gosh, I don't have the answers. I'm really not qualified to answer that question. It is really interesting to see, and I do know, having witnessed it firsthand, how, you know, how damn tough life is there when you just don't know whether you're going to be, you know, the random victim of one of those kinds of attacks. Those sticky bombs, as they call them, can just happen in Kabul at any time. And it must be, there's this latent sense of dread every time you step out of the door.
In both the Battle of Baghaq and the SAS operation you cover, there seems to be in both cases, as you just touched upon, like a lack of concern and potentially even neglect for the Afghan NDS forces. How damaging do you think this is long term, and how does this reflect back on New Zealand?
Actually, the NDS was full of respect for the New Zealand soldiers. There's a kind of deferential attitude in a way. And I don't know if you remember, but in August 2012, there was an IED attack 2 weeks after the Battle of Baghaq, which killed three New Zealand soldiers. And one of them was a medic, Lance Corporal Jacinda Baker. And many of those Afghan soldiers that we interviewed spoke incredibly highly of her and how many lives she had saved that day. She's almost deified there. But we never hear that story in New Zealand.
But, I mean, we never went back there. You know, emotions were running high and it seemed like New Zealand focused on New Zealand and lost that almost coalition between them and that work ethic. Like, surely that has some effect.
Well, yeah, I mean, we pulled out of there pretty soon after that, didn't we? So, because it was too dangerous. You know, we were there as a provincial reconstruction team, but from about 2008, 2009, we, as the former Chief of Defence, Rhys Jones, admitted in that interview, we changed our focus to security, not provincial reconstruction. And I think that's one of the main messages that I would hope that people take away from this documentary series is, you know, we as the public understood that this was not a combat mission. This was a hearts and minds mission. And yet here we are, August 2012, going on the attack. Why? Yeah. Why were our soldiers doing that? What kind of mission creep had happened that meant that a hearts and minds provincial reconstruction team was even in a firefight in the first place?
I'm going to put that back to you and say, having worked over 3 years and now finished this piece, what was New Zealand's role in Afghanistan and why were they there?
Such a good fundamental question.
Yeah.
That's why we need to have a commission of inquiry like other countries have done, because I can't answer that. I mean, the government of the time thought there were very good reasons why we should be there. Nobody predicted that we would be there for 10 years. Nobody predicted it would cost $300 million or 10 New Zealand lives. I think that's that very fundamental question that you ask is the reason why there needs to be a really open, transparent conversation, investigation, inquiry into why we were there, whether we achieved what we set out to, and if this kind of situation were to arise in the future, would we commit our troops again?
So earlier this year, in March, you launched your book with Nikki Hagar, Hit and Run, which looked at the role of the SAS in a specific operation. Can you tell us a bit more about this operation and the focus of the book on a whole?
Well, the operation was conceived in the aftermath of the death of a provincial reconstruction team officer called Lieutenant Tim O'Donnell in 2010. And he was killed while on patrol, and the New Zealand Defence Force planned and launched a raid to seize the people that they believe were responsible for that attack. And in the course of that attack, on there was a night raid in two villages in Baglan province, which is adjacent to Bamiyan, where the New Zealand Provincial Reconstruction Team was based. We say that they led an operation where 6 civilians were killed and 15 were wounded, as well as a lot of property damaged. And that was in part due to decisions made by the New Zealand Defence Force, particularly the SAS, and also the actions of their allies, the US, who provided helicopter support for the operation, both transport and attack helicopters, which fired on the village and the villages.
Mm. So your book received quite heavy criticism from military personnel and the New Zealand Defence Force. How much did they work with you?
Well, the interesting thing is that the criticism was from very specific quarters, particularly in the upper ranks, upper echelons of the Defence Force, but also that the criticism was very limited. The people who helped us with the book were rank and